So the subject today is a very interesting one, and it relates, I think, in an interesting way to, well, certainly it's all about life, but it's also about the circumstances today that are around us, whether it be economics or political or racial or even the health, our health. The pandemic has a great influence on us. Now, I'm working with a slightly different setup here, so forgive me as I try to organize myself a little bit. This is different for me than where I usually sit and how I organize. So I'm going to do this, and then I think we're going to do the invocation one more time so we have a good starting point for our class. Again, the Sufi invocation towards the One, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. Blow into the palms of your hands and feel the blessings of all the Masters, Saints, and Prophets with you, with us today. So the subject for today is the knowledge of life's battle, the knowledge of life's battle. And I thought this quote, it came up during this month. I don't have the date marked, but it is during this month. It was one of the Bolasakis, the daily meditations, and it reads like this. Every blow in life pierces the heart and awakens our feelings to sympathy. And every swing of comfort lulls us to sleep, and we become aware, unaware of all. I'll read it one more time. Every blow in life pierces the heart and awakens these feelings of sympathy. And every swing of comfort lulls us to sleep, and we become unaware of all. So if we look at it from one perspective, I will talk about it from the Buddhist perspective, although Mercer references these themes as well. I should say, I'll backtrack for one moment. At one point, I did a whole data search, and you may try these things because they're very interesting to see. When they first made a database available for Mercer's works, Hazard and Icon's works, I thought, I'm going to look up pain and suffering. How often does he speak of that? It's almost innumerable. And you know, if you've studied Rumi or you've studied Murshid's teachings, or you read the Bolasaki, he's always making reference to this. And at the same time, not only reference, but how great growth comes through difficulty. It can make us stronger. It's like, who of us can fly to the top of a mountain? But we can climb, but not without a great deal of effort. And so it is with life. We sometimes have to train. This is what these classes do for us. We go into retreats, we do practices, we get prepared for life. And we don't cling to those spiritual experiences because, well, that's not healthy, that spiritual materialism. But what we can do is we can learn from them. And we can realize that everything is in a flow, in a movement. Nothing lasts forever. So we sometimes can take great courage in the most difficult times. And remember, just if we were a mountain climber, we'd have to do a great deal of training. And that's what our spiritual practices do. They prepare us for life. And doing them daily reinforces and gives us strength and the tools to endure sometimes life's difficult battles, because who amongst us have not had those? But the shape of our character is formed around how we identify with those difficulties. You know, do we become a victim, or do we become, victorious? Again, there are two different things. We can become a victim of life, or we can become victorious. Our choice. Think about that. Think about that and maybe come back to this recording. It'll be online and listen to those words. Very important. Now, those were Nori's words, or Stephanie's words, some people call me, and that's just fine. But I'm going to read now from Mershit's words. Oh, and by the way, the quote I just read, I did note it. It was on Bolasaki, July 20th, if you want to go back and refer to that. Now, Mershit says, because life means a continual battle, one's successes, failures, happiness, or unhappiness mostly depends upon one's knowledge of this battle. Whatever be one's occupation in life, whatever be one's knowledge, if one lacks that knowledge of battle of life, one lacks the most important knowledge of all. Now, those of you that know me quite well know that I have a certain kind of temperament that can be rather fiery, and I can also be rather direct. So this is a very important lesson for me personally, because I have to learn what's worth fighting for. I don't think it's just me. I think we all need to learn that. Pierre Vilayet used to teach us, you know, everyone desires to be compassionate, but he says the shadow, because he always talked about Wazif as the spiritual practices as light and shadow, and anyone that's even had a cursory introduction to Jungian psychology are aware that we all have light and shadow, just as we all have feminine and masculine, the yin and the yang. But he would say, when you work with compassion, you also have to work with truth or strength, because if you just fall into this place where compassion shadows complacency. Compassion shadows complacency. So, you know, and I would add to it, compassion can lead to self-suffering. That's not what compassion is at all. Compassion is having the strength and the wherewithal to help others who are suffering, not fall into that suffering with them. I mean, if you're trying to help someone out of the hole, do you do it by jumping in? No, you do it by reaching down and lifting them out. So think about those things. I'm really chatty today. I'm not sure how far I'm going to get on this class, and the light seems a little weird here, but that's okay. We move on. The important question arises of what does this knowledge of life's battle consist? And Mershit answers it this way. It comprises the knowledge of warfare. Does that surprise you? It comprises the knowledge of warfare, how to fight and how to make peace. We need both. We need to understand those different energies. And that's the important thing. We have these words that are very, they trigger us. War and peace. But the truth is, war, we could say, is the active principle of life when we need to take action. And peace is the receptive when we can sit and contemplate. So these, even if we begin to associate different words, we'll start to see perhaps a deeper meaning to this teaching. Mershit goes on to say, human nature is very often makes the mistake of taking sides, either the side of war or the side of peace. But we need both. We need activity and we need passivity. We need them both. War, activity, peace, passivity, balance, balance. If one studies the history of nations and races, one will find that this is a mistake which often caused their failure. There have been times when nations and races have developed in their character the knowledge of peace. For instance, people such as the Hindus, with their most ancient civilization, but even with this peace, this could not bring them complete satisfaction, as one side of human nature was neglected, misunderstood. Boy, that's a whole class there about how certain classes evolved too. The Brahmin class, the priestly class, the warrior class. There were all these different classes, and they made a complete society. So Murshid goes on to say, and then we're going to do a practice. We're going to contemplate this, see if some understanding can open up for us. War comes from God in the same way that peace comes from God. War comes from God in the same way that peace comes from God. The fruit goes through many processes to become ripe and to become sweet. It takes sunshine and rain. Both are needed to make the fruit ripe. And that shows that war and peace both have their place. But with our limited understanding, we don't always comprehend the justice of what is to be done. Our limited understanding. For instance, if a person had lived all through all civilizations, that person would think very differently than the ordinary person of today. And so it is with God in regard to God's knowledge of the entire world. We too are limited to understand. So what are those two points of view? Again, Peer Vilayat, he's popping around for some reason today. He would say, there's a world of difference between man's judgment and God's judgment, or we could place the word justice there. So think about that. You know, we have man-made laws and then there are God laws. It's just as simple as that. There's divine law. So I'd like to work with this practice now. And there, while one of these words contains the essence of the other two words, I think it might be good for us to say all the sacred names together as one practice. And I'll explain that. The first word is Alim, Alim, with a long E, Alim. Alim is omniscience, this omniscient view and all-seeing and all-knowing of God. We're invoking that within ourselves when we say the word Alim. The other word is Kabir, and this isn't a hard K. It's spelled with a K-H, so there's some aspiration after that. It's like, you have that H sound right after the K. So it's very soft at the back of the throat. Now, if these sounds are difficult for you, it's okay. It's your intention that's most important. But it's also good to learn these sounds because they certainly activate certain centers within our body and create certain vibrations. So again, that's Kabir, Kabir. And this is the one who has perfect knowledge. But unlike Alim, this is the part of knowledge, wisdom, that is experienced through the senses. It is taken inward, it is distilled, and then the truth is experienced from that. And with Kabir, we're not deluded by what our eyes or our ears tell us. We understand a deeper meaning to what's happening. Deeper. And then the last word is Shahid. Shahid. You can see that they have some similar sound qualities. Now, Shahid is that it's that part of the divine attributes where nothing is hidden. Nothing is hidden. All is revealed. And all knowledge is revealed. And if we look at it a certain way, some of us that are a little farther along on the path may be familiar with the terms Jamal, Jalal, Kamal. Jamal is attributes of receptivity. So it's also beauty, it's harmony, it's delicacy. It might even be the royal aspect of the queen. It's sometimes associated with femininity, although this is a quality that men in their physical bodies also embrace. They have these qualities. If you've seen a father hold their baby, you see that beautiful gentleness, the willingness to harmonize with another being. Jalal is a more active principle. Again, think war, peace, war, peace. Jalal is more active. It's sometimes associated with more masculine qualities. So it's strength and it's courage and it's protection and it's mastery in a certain way. Shahid is that Kamal aspect. So Aleem, we could say, is Jamal. It's just all pervading. Jalal is like Kabir. It takes in the information, it distills it, and it sees the truth. And Shahid is Kamal, and Kamal is this place of absolute stillness and calm. It's different than peace. It's rather vacuous. It's expansive. It's like existence and non-existence cohabitate together. So in these three, we call them wazifas or mantras, we see those qualities, the Jamal, the Jalal, and the Kamal. Okay. Now, it sounds complicated, but I'll leave these notes, textual notes, available. So when you go to the website, you can click and you can read further. And you can also go to just look up these words, Jamal, Jalal, Kamal, and see what you discover about them. But we could also say, let's liken it to weather. So Jamal might be like a gentle sunny day, maybe not full on sun, but like filtered sun, but it's still just offering some warmth and some beauty to the light of our natural environment. And maybe there's only just a very gentle wind, just enough to be so perfect, just the perfect kind of day. Jalal will be a little more active. So we might hear some thunder, we might see a little more wind, and it might be a little more activity around us, more noise. And Kamal is that moment, and that's the scary moment in nature. I've survived a tornado, and so Kamal is like that perfect stillness when you're at the eye of the storm. And usually it's such perfect stillness, it's almost like things have really almost become non-existent. So it's a very delicate point to be at, and there's a shift that can occur as we come out of Kamal. In nature, it can be a storm, a severe storm. In our world around us, you may notice that, if you're in public, you maybe will hear more cars honking, and, you know, God protect them, a car accident, glasses breaking, things like that happen. And then it creates a shift into one of these other states. So it's good to be aware of that. It's good to watch those rhythms in our being. Do I feel stuck? Am I in a Kamalic state? Can I alter my breath to bring on another state? Am I more Jamal? Am I too receptive right now? So for example, whenever I would walk into a classroom or studio to work with students, I knew unless they were presenting their work, I didn't want to be too receptive. I had to be active. I had to be sending them energy, energizing them to get the information. They, on the other hand, needed to be more receptive to take that information in. That can all be controlled with the breath, but that's a whole other class. Okay. So let's work with this practice. And we will say, let me just say the words for you and then you can join me after a few times. I'll stop and then we'll begin again. So it'll go like this. Ya Aleem, Ya Kabir, Ya Shahid. Again, listen. Ya Aleem, Ya Kabir, Ya Shaheen. One more time and then we'll join. Ya Aleem, Ya Kabir, Ya Shaheen. If you'd like to join me, we'll do this 11 times with the Ya. And then we will drop the Ya and we'll go into a whisper. We'll breathe in. When we do that, it'll look like this. It'll sound like this. We'll breathe in. Ya'ali. We'll breathe out. Ya'kabir. And then we breathe in and hold. Ya'shahid. Okay, I'll remind you. Then we'll just do it silently for 11 times. But there is a purpose behind all the directions of the breath and how we use the breath with the sound, the internal sound. Okay, so we'll begin 11 times with intoning or chanting these sacred words. Ya Ali, Ya Kabir, Ya Shaheed. 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 Rest for a moment in the breath. Notice your inner state, your outer state, and your atmospheric state. Now we breathe out while we say just Alim Kabir Shaheed. We lose the ya. There's a reason for that too. But many of you know it, others will learn. So we're going to say Ali. And then in Kabir. And then we breathe out. And then say Shaheed. Hold your breath. Now, breathe out, and then breathe in, saying, Ali, Kabir. Excuse me, now breathe in, and hold, thinking, Shaheed. Breathe out. Whisper in, Ali. Out, Kabir. Breathe in, hold, Shaheed. Breathe out. Now breathe in. Ali. Breathe out. Kabir. Breathe in. Thinking. Shaheed. Hold the breath for a moment. Okay. Breathe in. Ali. Breathe out. Kabir. Breathe in. Hold. Release the breath. Breathe in. Ali. Breathe out. Kabir. Breathe in. Hold. Shaheed. Release the breath. Breathe in. Ali. Breathe out, copy. Breathe in, hold. Release the breath. Breathe in, Ali. Breathe out, copy. Breathe in and hold, Shaheed. Release the breath. Breathe in, Ali. Breathe out, copy. Breathe in and hold. Release the breath. And just relax in the breath. And now we just think of these three words internally. And we can again put them on the breath. Breathing in, Aleem, out, Kabir, and in, Shaheed, and hold for a moment. But more important is feeling these qualities, the omniscience of God, the ability to draw in through our senses, but to still to the essence of truth, and being the silent witness breathing in with the omniscience of God, Aleem, Kabir, drawing information from our senses, but not being deluded by our senses, seeing the deeper truth of what is, and Shaheed, the witness to all from which nothing can hide, or nothing is hidden. It all is revealed. Amen. You can see from this, just by doing a practice and taking one's time, we only did it 33 times. But I know we're often given our practice 101 times. I think I've shared that I was given them 1,001 and 501. They say they do that for very hard-headed students, so that tells you something. My teacher was very wise, but it made an impression. So sometimes we need to do those practices more times, but we need not do them just like a parrot making a sound. We want to do them with feeling and understanding. So if you don't have so much time at a particular point of day, you can do fewer, but do them with depth. Think of all your brothers and sisters worldwide doing these practices, and they get magnified by joining together. Now back to the reading. Hazaran Anayat Khan says, now of course you remember, he passed away in 1927, so these teachings are all pre-1927. Excuse me. A little sip of water. In this present age, Murshid says, it seems that the knowledge of warfare has developed, but on the other hand, the knowledge of peace is absent. For the full knowledge of warfare is both the knowledge of battle and the knowledge of peace. This can be learned, according to the mystics, by battling with oneself. This can be learned, according to the mystics, by battling with oneself. So important. The battle isn't external, the battle is within. And the ultimate goal is to find that balance where there is peace and there's equipoise, but we also have the strength to endure life's daily challenges. So again, this can be learned, according to the mystics, by battling with oneself and by bringing about peace with one's own soul. The life of an individual is not very different from the life of the world. And Murshid here makes a capital L for life of the world. So the life, small l, the life of an individual is not very different from the life, capital L, large L, of the world. An individual person's home is not different from the world. I remember when Pir Shadow was visiting our local camp in the summers, and someone asked him, it was an esoteric conversation, we were doing practices, and someone asked him, oh, I've heard that you shouldn't allow someone to sit on your bed, that would, their energies could be left, you could have residual responses to their energy. And Pir Shabda's response was this: well, what do you do if the whole world is your bed? What do you do if the whole world is your bed? That's a very different kind of thinking. So the life of an individual is not very different from the life of the world. An individual's home, or we could say bed, is not different from the world. An individual's body and mind and spirit form the whole universe. An individual life can fill the gap between the dawn of creation and the last day. We do not realize how important our own life is. We do not realize how important our own life is. And the study of one's own life and our own self is a study of the greatest importance. And you've heard me say it so many times, to thine own self be true. And you also know it is said, know thyself and thou shalt know God. Know thyself and thou shalt know God. So ask yourself, reflect upon one's life. Are you enacting the highest good of God's purpose for you? And if not, why not? And how to make that shift so important? So Murshid again goes on to say, a healthy person, think about this in terms of our pandemic. A healthy person has waiting at the door several illnesses, several diseases, waiting for an opportunity when they will attack. A person with wealth has many who wait at the door for the chance to take away what one possesses. A person with whom good is said has many waiting a moment when something bad may be said about them. A person who has power or position, how many are not waiting for the opportunity to pull them down and see them slide down from the place where they stand? And what does this show? Why is it so? One may give a thousand reasons, and yet no proper reason. The best explanation one can give is that life is a continual battle. But here, we can go back even to the first point of this paragraph about the illnesses. Now there you see, we really want to have a war against this coronavirus. We want there to be a vaccine that will kill it. So now we take this example that warfare isn't always good and peace isn't always, warfare isn't always bad and peace necessarily isn't always good. If you had to defend a member of your family Would you just say, oh, I'm going to sit here and be peaceful and let whatever happens, happens? No, you would take some action and hopefully not hurt yourself and other people in the time, but you would do something to shift the energy. I would think, you know, even if it's yelling or throwing something in another direction, just to shift the energy. I mean, we are at war, but we are at war with ourselves. I just want to say that. It's look in the mirror. That's who we're at war with. And there are other things. There are this disease. Now, I would say we have to all take our precautions. We know in the United States is especially so. Other countries have handled it so much better. But we also don't need to be sitting waiting at the door with it open, inviting it in. So we have to live and try to really live, because we don't know. If you catch this disease, you could be gone in 2 weeks. I mean, it's not so bad. You have a little trouble breathing and you're gone. It was better than a long lingering suffering, perhaps. But at any rate, we really have to live, because life is very precious and we see how easily it can be taken from us, especially at this time. So we take our precautions, but we go on living and we go on loving and we go on giving. So important. But the one thing you don't want to do is worry or be afraid, because that's like letting all of our defenses down. It's like inviting something in to happen. You know, the more we think about it, the more we draw it to us. Any mystic will tell you that. All the teachings say that. So take care. Watch your thoughts. Be mindful. So, a little bit more here. The process of creation began like this. According to science, light comes from friction. Click two things, stones together, there's a spark. It is one power against the other power, fighting, and then there's the spark. It's energy though, it's energy. And from these two different forces striking upon each other comes an effect. And that effect in reality may be called life. And that effect in reality may be called life. So we could look at it perhaps, you know, that the earth has done that. There's been these shifts in the plates of the earth, and then new islands emerge, new life emerges. And that's from friction. That's from a struggle. You know, who's going to rise to the top? So just look in nature. We can see it everywhere. I'm looking out my doorway here in the trees, you know, the ones that struggle and reach the tall canopy are the ones that are going to get the most light. It's just the way it is. It's a part of nature. So then Murshid goes on to say this. In this lies the secret of both love and hate. One sees in the animal kingdom that the first tendency of the animal is to instinctively fight one another. And just think about this, how it might happen. Someone maybe new comes to your place of employment and you may be really friendly, but maybe you're a little guarded or maybe you're a little territorial. We too do it. It's okay to acknowledge it. It's okay to shift it too. It's good to shift it, but to be aware of it. Am I reacting because this is someone new into my territory? Maybe that happens with families when people take another partner, bring somebody new into the family. So one sees in the animal kingdom that tendency is first to instinctively fight one another. This tendency becomes modified, and in its modification, it reduces the force that produces in them what we all call virtues. So when it becomes modified and we start to control it, we can turn something and it can become a virtue. By the way, the elemental breaths help us with this too. rising from the denseness of the earth. Another subject, perhaps a whole workshop on breath, a weekend retreat, who knows? And the best knowledge is not only the knowledge of all that is good and beautiful, all that is harmonious and peaceful. Okay, so now this, we're talking about those Jamal qualities, listen to them. And the best knowledge is not only the knowledge of all that is good and beautiful, all that is harmonious and peaceful, but also the knowledge of the causes that are behind all conflicts. What's behind the conflict? The conflict is one thing, but what's behind the conflict? And all the battles that one has to face in life. I remember when I was teaching college and one of my, you know, students was acting peculiar. And sometimes it would be directed towards me, which, you know, that isn't going to happen. So I would take them aside and I'd say, what's really bothering you? And the next thing you know, here come all the tears and the explanations of something that had happened. So if I had reacted to that, I could get very angry at that person and say, oh, they're being mean to me, or they're doing, you know, whatever, saying nasty, acting nasty. Who cares? They can do whatever they want. But I wanted to help them. So I'd say privately, not to embarrass them, what else is going on? Is there something else? Is there anything you want to talk about? Sometimes someone really wants to, they're ready to, and sometimes they want to wait. That is also to be respected. But take the time to inquire and not make it all about oneself. It's very helpful. The reason why one generally lacks this knowledge is because when one is faced with a battle, one wants to fight. Oh, they said something bad to me. Now I'm going to say something bad to them and hurt their feelings. Children do this all the time. You know that. Well, we're children too in some ways. The reason why generally one lacks this knowledge is because when one is faced with a battle, one wants to fight. Instead of first wanting to learn how to fight. And the one who goes into life's battle without first acquiring the knowledge of warfare loses the battle. You exhaust yourself. There's no more energy for anything else. Don't exhaust oneself. Be wise, be smart, be thoughtful. But when one learns how this warfare of life, warfare of life first, learns its reasons and its causes, and becomes more capable of fighting the battle of one's life. So it's good to look at oneself. Why are these conditions in my life? How have I assimilated things and brought this into my reality? Is it possible to shift this? I say yes, I know, from my own experience. Now, I'm going to move to another chair. And when I move to another chair, you'll still hear me, but it will allow you to see this entire image. And I want to talk a little bit about this image. You may think, oh, Nuria picks a pretty picture. Oh, how interesting is that? I want to talk about this image and what it really means. Okay, so now I'm going to shift and then I'll come back. It's going to be like this whole magic TV thing. So let me just shift over here. And you can see now. And can everyone hear me well? Can you just shake your heads yes? Okay, good. So, what do we have here in this picture? I'm going to move this a little bit so I'm not inclined to come in on that screen. And you may unmute yourself if you wish to talk about it. But first, let's go from background to foreground. So the background are all the little flowers and the vines. And if we look at that from the aspect of life, by the way, this is I found this image by looking up trees of life. So you can see that this is one of the representations of the tree of life. This is a very sacred image in so many cultures. So that gives you a little bit of the idea. But I picked this one also because it had these different kinds of images in it. So first, when we look at the background, what does the background tell you about life? Does it give you an indication of what life is for us? I mean, is it just a bed of roses? Is that what it's saying? Or is it saying something else? Anyone?
I see abundance.
Abundance, okay. Anyone else?
It's all interconnected. It's Carolyn.
That's right. It's all interconnected. What else? Very good.
There's an exuberance.
An energy, oh. Life force. Yeah, an exuberance. What else?
Confusion.
Who said confusion?
Greg.
Confusion. Okay. I think that's good. I agree. What else?
Busy.
It's busy. It's active. Isn't it very active? Okay. And you know, the idea is there aren't straight lines. The path is meandering. Do you see that? That's very important. So all the qualities that you've said and the fact, Greg said confusing, but we could say there's not a clear map here. You can follow one and then you pick up another. This is very much like life. We don't have just one road we're traveling. We may take many, many roads to get to the place of the ultimate goal, okay? So now, what's happening with the I'm gonna call them lions. Someone called them dogs, but I think they're meant to be lions. Although, it's very interesting. What does the lion have around its neck?
A collar.
What does that mean to you?
It's controlled.
Control of what?
Power.
Okay. What's the lion representing here, do you think? Anybody?
Courage.
Uh-huh.
Strength.
Yes.
Protectors.
Protectors, yeah, for sure. But relation to ourself, what are those lions representing? Relationship to our inner self. Those qualities, but what else?
Courage.
Okay. I'm going to move on and just say, and then look at their tongues. Are they smiling or what are they doing with their tongues?
They're thirsty.
Thirsty. They could be. Yes,
no, I see them as threat. They're possibly threatening. That's why they have the collars on.
I think this is very, very important because Murshid in this teaching talked about how animals instinctively fight each other when they come into each other's territory. And yet there's collars on these lions and they're starting to rise up off of their four legs. So if you study most spiritual traditions, they may be couched in good and evil, but we could talk about it in terms of too much self-appreciation, not thinking enough of others, too much self-reflection. In some traditions, it's talked about controlling the animal nature. Okay, so here we have these powerful animals, but they're collared. So to me, it is an indication that we are trying to somehow control. It's a picture of controlling our animal nature. And these two lions are flanked by these other images, which should give you a clue too. What are those images? They're coming rising out of their backs or out of maybe even their heart spaces.
It's the personality.
Yeah. Again, it's us trying to rise above, rise out of, become radiant beings, because there's that radiance, these kind of halos around their heads. We could also say it's a battle between the angelic part of ourselves and the animal part of ourselves. Who's felt that? Who's not felt that? Let's ask that question. Mm-hmm. I want to know that person who's not had that struggle between this spiritual side and this earthly side, or this again, the angelic part of ourselves, the aware part of ourselves, and the dross of our being, you know, this animalistic self that seeks just one side of life. Who's not had that struggle along the way? Would you all agree that we've all had it in some way?
Yeah,
I think so. Okay, so let's go back to the image. Now, what are these two lions doing? I mean, they're not exactly doing it, they're kind of doing it, like with in relationship to the vase. Would you say they're holding it up?
No.
Or kind of holding it in place, or, you know, they're again like the guardians, maybe protecting this as well. Okay. And what is the vase representing? Does anyone get an idea of that?
Well, to me, it's interesting. It's a vessel.
It's a vessel.
And it's also interesting to me that it's gray, because it makes me think of the heart, like mirror again. They're facing that inner vessel.
Looking within, perhaps. Looking within. And then what's coming out of the vessel? I mean, we could say, are the flowers going in the vessel, or are the flowers growing out of the vessel?
That's it, they're coming out.
They're going out. Yeah, it's like all of life is springing from this internal awareness. And then last, what do we have above?
Birds.
What do birds indicate?
Freedom.
Freedom. Mm-hmm. I agree. What else?
Light.
Light? Did someone say light?
And flight.
Flight. Taking flight, that's right. Raise above the denseness of the earth. Do you see it's all there? We have the earth, we have the animals, we have the flowers, trees, the birds. And so this makes a whole complete picture of life. And it makes a complete
Sorry.
You might want to mute you. Shams, can you help there? Get Sir and Greg muted, or Gemma. Anyway, this represents a complete picture of our internal and external life. So now I'm going to pop back in the picture. Hello. What I would like for you to do, those of you that are in our Sufi circle, and those of you that aren't, but would like to participate with us, and again, it's always respectful to ask your own guide if it's okay to take up a different practice, because these are like medicines and we don't want to mix them with ill result. But I would like for you to, you know, maybe even just the people in our Mirrored Circle, I can send this image to you. But, you know, you can take your phone and take a picture off of the internet, or you can drag it off. Keep it on your phone. And when you think to do Alim, Kabir, Shahid, look at this image. Try to do that once a day, even if it's just 11 times. Contemplate this image and let it come into you. Let the language, you know, in the mysticism of sound, Murshid also talks about the mysticism of color, the mysticism of shapes. Let that come into you. An artist gave great devotion to create this picture of life. Let this life come into you and contemplate it. Perhaps by doing this, we will also look about our world in a different way and start to see things differently. But don't just look at it, see it. And don't just see it, feel it. And don't just feel it, understand it. Can you try that? Would that be worth an experiment at least? Is everyone in? Yeah, okay, good. I'm gonna read one more paragraph and we will close, but I do want you to know there is an initiation at the end of this, after our prayers and our dedication. And those of you that are in the circle, that if you want to, anyone can stay, please, you all may. You all are certainly invited. It's a good time to, in the Catholic Church, whenever the children are baptized or they take a communion or confirmation, they invite us to recommit to our own vows. And so this is a good time to do that. Not that you're taking that with me, but you can remember your own teacher if it's different than me and kind of recommit to your initiation vows. So that will happen at the end, and I want to be sure to invite all of you to stay, and especially those in our Murid circle, if you can stay as witness and support, that would be great. So I want to read one more paragraph before we close. Christ pointed to a secret when he said, "Resist not evil." This means that if one resists or wants to fight a battle every time something in another person appears wrong or unjust, one will lose one's power. So be mindful of that. Take a step back. Maybe just tether oneself to Aleem, Kabir, Shahid. Get greater insight to not be so troubled, not have the immediate response to react, but take the time to respond. For the competent general is not always the one who attacks. The competent general is the one who stands firm in defense. Success is more secure than the one who is in continual battle and attacking. Very often in everyday life, one sees that by losing one's temper with someone who has already lost their temper, one does not gain anything, but only sets out upon the path of stupidity. Mershit's words, not mine, although they're good words. The one who has enough self-control to stand firm at the moment when the other person is in a temper wins in the end. It is not the person who has spoken 100 words aloud who has won, but the one who perhaps has spoken only one word. One word. Perhaps no words. So think about that. When we're in these life's battle, is it sometimes perhaps better to be silent, go into prayer, try to see what's behind it? And then sometimes it's as simple as someone's very tired, or something else happened before they came to meet you, or they're hungry. Students used to come in class and say they were hangry. They were hungry and angry. But they were angry because they were hungry. I mean, sometimes it's something like that. And if we take it all personal, it's a problem. I mean, it makes a fight, perhaps over nothing. So remember these practices, take them as your own until we meet again. Aleem, Kabir, Shahid. Aleem, Kabir, Shahid. Take those deeply into your being. Use them as your friends. They're your friends. You're invoking those qualities from all of the elemental world, and you're invoking it from that elemental world from within, so that that energy from within may rise out with the energy from without and come together. Think about that. So we will say now the closing prayer of Khatum together, please. O thou who art the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty,